Thank you, Seth. I am going to do my best tonight to repeat any questions or answers so that everybody can hear. So if I don't do that, someone throw something at me or raise your hand so I know to say it. You're not going to hurt my feelings. You might hurt my face if you throw something at me, but not my feelings. So, I have not been here the past 2 weeks. So Mike told me we're on week 5, and that's where I went. So hopefully that is where we are. It's page 35 in the workbook. He said last week that we talked through two questions. One was Nebuchadnezzar saved? And the other was, why is it written in the first person? Yes? Is that what we did? Okay. They sounded like good conversations. I hope they worked. Did he read through the whole chapter here in chapter 4? Okay. He has. All right. Well, I'm going to read through it again. What's that? Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny. No, they're not. I added some questions in here, too. I tend to do that. It's a good question, though, because and it's one of those questions where when you read the commentaries, that's what they're asking. Is he saved or is he not saved? So it's an important question. But I will start by reading Daniel chapter 4. I told Mike that we're going to try to finish Daniel tonight. But we're probably only going to get through this section 1 here. So he said, I'll retrace. So let me read this then. Daniel 4, starting in verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. It has seemed good to me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion endures from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and prospering in my palace. I saw a dream that made me afraid. As I lay in bed, the fancies and the visions of my head alarmed me. So I made a decree that all the wise men of Babylon should be brought before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the enchanters, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers came in, and I told them the dream, but they could not make it known to me. They could not make known to me its interpretation. At last, Daniel came in before me, he who is named Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And I told him the dream, saying, O Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you and that no mystery is too difficult for you, tell me the vision of my dream that I saw and their interpretation. The visions of my head as I lay in bed were these. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong, and its top reached to heaven, and it was visible to the end of the whole earth. Its leaves were beautiful, and its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the heavens lived in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the visions of my head as I lay in bed, and behold, a watcher, a holy one, came down from heaven. He proclaimed aloud and said thus, chop down the tree and lop off its branches. Strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts flee from under it and the birds from its branches. But leave the stump of its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze amid the tender grass of the field. Let him be wet with the dew of heaven. Let his portion be with the beasts and the grass of the earth. Let his mind be changed from a man's, and let a beast's mind be given to him. And let 7 periods of time pass over him. The sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the holy ones, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will and sets over it the lowliest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, saw. And you, O Belteshazzar, tell me the interpretation, because all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in you. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king answered and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar answered and said, O Lord, may the dream be for those who hate you and its interpretation for your enemies. The tree you saw, which grew and became strong so that its top reached to heaven and it was visible to the end of the whole earth, whose leaves were beautiful and its fruit abundant, and in which was food for all, under which beasts of the field found shade and whose branches the birds of the heavens lived. It is you, O king, who have grown and become strong. Your greatness has grown and reaches to heaven, and your dominion to the ends of the earth. And because the king saw a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump of its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze, in the tender grass of the field, and let him be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts of the field, till 7 periods of time pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king. It is a decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. You shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and you shall be wet with the dew of heaven, and 7 periods of time shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. And as it was commanded to leave the stump of the roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be confirmed for you from the time that you know that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by practicing righteousness and your iniquities by showing mercy to the oppressed, that there may perhaps be a lengthening of your prosperity. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of 12 months, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace in Babylon. And the king answered and said, is not this great Babylon, which I have built by my mighty power as a royal residence and for the glory of my majesty? While the words were still in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven. O King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you, and you shall be driven from among men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and you shall be made to eat grass like an ox, and 7 periods of time shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. Immediately the word was fulfilled against Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from among men and ate grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair grew as long as eagle's feathers and his nails were like birds' claws. At the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven and my reason returned to me. And I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, and he does according to his will among the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say to him, what have you done? At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my majesty and my splendor returned to me. My counselors and my lords sought me, and I was established in my kingdom, and still more greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are right, and all his ways are just, and those who walk in pride he is able to humble. Amen. Probably one of my favorite chapters in the Old Testament. It's funny, isn't it? I always picture him on the roof saying, oh, how wonderful. It says the words are still in his mouth, right? Boom. And then suddenly he's eating grass. Like, man, what a picture. And then he says the last line. I know those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. First-hand experience. I ate grass for a long time. I didn't even know my own name, right? I love this chapter. Let me read this, the place of the passage right here, page 35 in the big picture, and then we'll get into this first question. The place of the passage, this passage centers upon another of Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, this time of a toppled tree. Daniel, who did not make an appearance in the previous chapter, returns to the scene as the one to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dream. The toppling of the tree is intended to teach Nebuchadnezzar about the preeminence of the God of Israel, a lesson he learns only by being humbled. This chapter can be viewed as parallel with Daniel 5, where Belshazzar is similarly confronted with his own pride, but the outcome is decidedly different. So the big picture here is that this chapter teaches that God is able to humble those who walk in pride. I'd say that's an understatement, but it's true. We'll just get into this first question then. Daniel 4, 1 through 3. This is under Nebuchadnezzar's dream and its interpretation. Verses 1 through 3 provide an introduction to the events recorded in this chapter. Nebuchadnezzar declares that he wants to show the signs and wonders. That's in verse 2. That the Most High has done for him. Two questions. Number one, what specific signs and wonders does he have in mind? Does Nebuchadnezzar have in mind that the Most High has done for him? And number two, why does he also affirm God's everlasting kingdom in this context? What are the signs and wonders? So this, I think verses 1, 2, and 3 are written after the fact, obviously, because he's writing what happened. So he's telling you, here's what happened, signs and wonders. His kingdom is everlasting and his dominion lasts forever. So what specific signs and wonders does he have in mind? By the way, just so you know this, I like long, awkward silences. They give me like a sick pleasure here. So the longer you guys don't answer questions, just the happier I feel. So what do you have? That would be a sign and wonder, certainly. Yeah, I didn't think prior to this, but definitely it would be one.
I was just going to say the fact that he could take somebody who felt like there was no match for him on the planet, break him down instantly, do exactly what you described.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big part of it.
So, I mean, I think, let me tell you that. I think that's where that's why, by the way, I'm going to praise and I'm going to extol and I'm going to, he is the king and he is great.
Yeah.
And that's like right in the second half of that breath.
I think so. I mean, guy experienced some stuff, didn't he? To say the least. I actually, one of the commentaries started off by saying, you know, people say the Bible's full of silly stuff that can't happen, and he was explaining some medical, psychological diagnoses of people who think they're animals, and actually, there was a case he was talking about of a guy who they would have to watch him because he would go outside and he'd start eating grass and wallowing in the mud and eating the dirt and stuff, and he survived for a long time doing this before anyone realized the guy needed help. And so, could Nebuchadnezzar have survived for whatever the 7 periods of time was? We can talk about that. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he'd have the greatest gut health in the world, but
what's astounding, I think, is it's not like you're going to, like, I'm going to go live off the land, you know, in my human reasoning.
Right.
I'm going to go survive on berries and nuts
Right.
He wasn't doing that.
No.
He had the mind of an animal.
He wasn't thinking straight, right? Because what he said, verse 36 and verse 34 says his reason returned to him. Guy was out of his mind, literally. That's what happened. So the signs and wonders, you said the increase of his greatness was one that I'd taken down. Because that's what he says. Afterwards, it was restored to him, and still more greatness was added to him.
I just think of the asterisk that would be next to somebody that goes down for a while, and then he's brought back, and people are like, oh, I don't know about this guy. And that wasn't the case.
No.
Everything plus.
Yeah, there wasn't, Seth said there wasn't anybody questioning, you know, should we be following this guy afterwards? I mean, there might have been one or two people probably, but still more greatness was added to him. You think the Most High was trying to teach him a lesson by even giving him more greatness after the fact? Is there a verse for that? Somewhere else? Something about setting up kings? I don't remember the verse. He does it though, right? What were you going to say? There was something on your face.
Mm-hmm. Just God revealing himself to Nebuchadnezzar, both those instances, but just something that I kind of picked up was that in that first one, which is pretty miraculous and amazing,
yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar was kind of he was a witness to that.
Sure.
So he was a witness to that. This one, he's an actual participant.
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost like God is revving up the
yeah. It's not good enough for you to be sitting in the audience. You need to be on the stage for this one, right? Yeah. Yeah, so I have one of the signs and wonders is the dream and its interpretation. I mean, think about this. This isn't the first time that Nebuchadnezzar has had a dream that's talking about the future of him and his kingdom is going to look like and its interpretation. That doesn't happen to most people, I don't think. There's, you know, unless you're watching some crazy TV shows or something like that. The judgment is certainly a sign. The restoration of reason is certainly a wonder, and the increase of his greatness. Yeah, I mean, Nebuchadnezzar certainly experienced the highs and lows of the judgment of God and the restoration and providence of God, all of it. Pretty amazing. Verse 2, you said?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed good to me. Yeah. So let me ask you this. Last week, since I wasn't here, you can tell me, what did you conclude? Was Nebuchadnezzar saved or not? It sounded like a testimony? Okay. Okay. At the very least, you could say that he was sure that this God was greater than the other gods, right? Whether he was saved or not, he was at least at this point calling him the Most High, right? He's not a God among the other gods. He is the Most High God. Yeah, right? So it seemed good to me to tell you this story. Because I have it on good authority that he can have you eating some plants for a long time and be out of your mind. Plants aren't all bad, by the way. Steaks are good, though.
I just thought it was interesting that the king himself was saying, it's good to tell you this.
Mm.
Sending it to the whole kingdom, and yet this chunk is decidedly absent from Babylonian record.
Yeah. Yeah, that the king of Babylon would say, this is good to tell my kingdom. Certainly.
I think we even said last week the fact that it was Nebuchadnezzar, like Daniel, let Nebuchadnezzar tell it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he brought Nebuchadnezzar up on stage and said, share your testimony, dude. People need to hear this. Absolutely. What about the second question? Why does he also affirm God's everlasting kingdom in this context? It's right here at the front where he's saying, I need to tell you this story, and it seemed good to me to explain the signs and wonders of the Most High God has done for me. Why do you think right here he affirms the everlasting kingdom of God in this context?
His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. And this kingdom will be God.
God's kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, yeah.
He took his, he took them and answered himself out of his own kingdom. So it's like, wow, so this guy is God.
Right. What do you think Nebuchadnezzar was thinking about his kingdom at the time that this happened? About his own kingdom, not God's kingdom, but his own kingdom.
At the time he's saying it, or at the time he's...
At the time that the events happened. As when he's on the roof saying, look at all this wonderful...
I don't know that he would have been able to have any thought about that. Right? Maybe if he had the animal's mind.
No, I mean before that. What's he thinking about his own kingdom? Probably that it's an everlasting kingdom. I'm reading William Scherer's book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I don't know if you ever heard of a guy named Adolf Hitler, but probably a little wackier than Nebuchadnezzar, but the same type of thinking. We are going to establish a kingdom, and it's going to stand for 1,000 years. 1,000 years is a long time, by the way. So, and the Babylonian Empire was not, it wasn't just like a band of nomads. I mean, this would be the power of something like Rome at that time, the power of the United States now. Imagine if somehow, you know, we don't have power vested in one person, obviously, but if the United States somehow can be put on the ground to eat grass for a while, shown that it's not the everlasting kingdom on earth. I mean, that's what happened with Nebuchadnezzar. It's a pretty big event. It's not just one guy out in the field eating, but he's in charge of everything. You know, the sacred and the secular are not divorced in ancient times. He controls the army, he controls the religion, he controls commerce. But he's over there drinking out of a stream right now for some reason. Yeah.
He chopped the head of the kingdom off. I mean, what about all the other enemies that could come in and take over?
Absolutely. But think about, did you hear what Seth said? Let me think about, there's not just that he can take down the king, but that he can preserve the kingdom during this time, in a time where anybody would want to take over Babylon, and then he sets him back up, and the kingdom is greater than it was before. Who has the power to do something like that? Has to be the one with the everlasting kingdom and the dominion. The dominion means powerful rulership. It endures from generation to generation. Crazy. It's true. Let's look at the second question. Nebuchadnezzar's dream involves a giant tree being chopped down by a watcher, a holy one, who came down from heaven. Verse 13. But this angel or heavenly messenger is instructed to leave the stump of its roots in the earth. Verse 15. What is the meaning of leaving the stump?
Okay, so the stump would be
to the preservation of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then in chapter 5, to call his grandson into account, saying, you know what happened to your grandfather. What? Okay, so they're saying, that's the way I took that.
Yeah, I think I think it's specifically Nebuchadnezzar, because he's the one that, it was when he was taken down that the birds fled and the shade was gone. Right. Interesting parallel in the New Testament. Jesus talks about his kingdom as a tree, right? But it fills the whole earth and it doesn't get chopped down. But yeah, I think preservation. Interesting. I was trying to figure out. It says, but leave the stump of its roots in the earth bound with a band of iron and bronze. And this is what the commentary said. Iron and bronze should spark in your thinking the previous times that these metals were spoken of in the previous dream. Okay. That's what happened. Thanks for the help. That was about as far as it went. Someone said the binding of it probably means judgment, that there's judgment upon this stump. There wasn't much else there. But yeah, so there's a few places I want us to turn where the Bible speaks about a stump. The picture of a stump in an Old Testament is not the picture of death and hopelessness. I mean, have you ever seen, so the big palm tree that used to be out here that was scary and big and we all thought it was going to fall on us and kill us someday, that we got cut down. I don't know if you looked around, but if you go throughout the parking lot, that palm tree is through every crack that you can. I get rid of it every time I see it. It just keeps popping up. So stump isn't necessarily death, but it's definitely cut down, for lack of a better phrase there. It's definitely cut down to size. And so I think preservation is one. I think hope is another one that's implied in stump. That Nebuchadnezzar was the tree?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Yes. I think that's good. You guys hear that? Yeah. I don't remember when it was mentioned, but Mike had us go back to Genesis 49. In verse 10 of Genesis 49 is one part of it. There might be another part. Oh, this is where we're talking about the stone, where the stone in the previous dream that rolls down the hill and crushes the legs of the statue. We were back here in Genesis 10. So Jesus descended from the line of Judah, right? David was a descendant of Judah. Jesus, the son of David. So in Genesis 49, you have Jacob on his deathbed, blessing his sons, and each of these sections are a blessing to his son. He blesses Judah in verse 8. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down before you. Judah is a lion cub from the prey. My son, you have gone up. He stooped down. He crouched as a lion and as a lioness. Who dares rouse him? Verse 10, this is the verse that sort of kicks off this whole, the messianic line from Judah. the scepter, that is the ruling scepter, shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until tribute comes to him, and he shall be the obedience of the peoples. But by the time you get to, sorry, I'm not going to make you flip too much, but by the time you get to Isaiah, you have an issue with the Jewish people, don't you? I mean, what's going on here in Daniel? They've been exiled, right? One of them has pretty much been wiped off the face of the earth. And another small group has been taken in. And by the time that they come out of Babylonian captivity in about 70 years, there's just a few thousand of them. So Isaiah chapter 6, what verse do I have here? Verse 13. This is Isaiah's commission from the Lord. He's talking about this people. You probably recognize verse 9. Keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull, their eyes heavy and blind. He says, you're going to go out and you're going to preach to these people, and they're not going to hear and they're not going to understand. And Jesus quotes this all the time when he's preaching through the Gospels, right? Verse 13. He says, and though a tenth remain in it, that means only a tenth of these people are going to be preserved. It will be burned again like a terebinth or an oak whose stump remains when it is felled. Its holy seed is its stump. So this picture of a tree being cut down to size is common biblical imagery. And he's talking about the Jewish people, Judah here specifically, who the scepter is not supposed to depart from, that his rule will be until the triumph comes. And he says, his stump remains when it's felled, the holy seed is its stump. Go just a few verses, a few chapters further into Isaiah 11. And you guys should know Isaiah 11 now because we've been back in here in Revelation on Tuesdays. But here's the stump that's been cut down. Verse 1 of Isaiah 11. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Jesse's David's father. A shoot. That's what's happening in the cracks out in the parking lot. The shoots of the palm tree are popping up. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, who in Revelation 5 is named Jesus, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him. We know this is talking about Jesus. There's a few other places in the Old Testament, but I wanted to show this imagery here that the picture of the stump is not a bad picture. I imagine if you're the tree, it's not a good picture, right? I don't know that they used a chainsaw to cut down trees, but it wasn't pretty. But the picture of a stump, the picture of a tree being cut down, is preservation, like Nick said, and it's hope, and it's a pruning, and what comes forth from that is growth. So this is an important picture, biblically, theologically. One that I don't know that Nebuchadnezzar would have gotten right away, but I like to think that Daniel probably said, let's read Isaiah together. Check out this imagery that I'm going to write down for future peoples to be able to see about what God was doing. Okay, I lied. There's one other place I want you to see. You don't have to turn there, but let me read it. Job 14, if I can find the book of Job. Job 14 and verse 7 says, for there is hope for a tree if it be cut down, that it will sprout again and that its shoots will not cease. That's picturing a Semitic understanding of what a stump would be. There's hope for a tree that when it's cut down, its shoots will not cease. So I'm going to interject my own question right here because they didn't ask this, and I think it's a good one. We sort of skip ahead of the... He skipped through this stuff real quick, didn't he? Just straight from 3 to 15 to 25. But look at verse 19. It says, Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king answered and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream nor its interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, may the dream be for those who hate you and its interpretation for your enemies. So I wanted to ask if I can read my own handwriting. What two characteristics do we see in Daniel's response to the king? I think there's two very important things we see in Daniel's response to the king. And I know I'm throwing this at you when you hadn't looked over this question. But what maybe you see more in there than I do, but what two things do you see in Daniel's response to the king? Well, is he saying that's for your enemies, or is he saying, I wish that this was for your enemies? Yeah. Yeah. He sees some compassion for Nebuchadnezzar, right? That's important. Yeah, you're headed right where I'm going. She said that he has a sense of duty or love or compassion for the king. He feels like he needs to step in and tell him which direction to go. And that's important. So I want you to see this. First of all, think about how Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel's relationship could have been. Yeah? There's a verse in the New Testament. Jesus says something about love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And I think Daniel personifies that pretty well, don't you think? Some people had been killed that Daniel knew by this regime, taking him in, all this stuff. I mean, you could fill in the blanks of all the things that happened to Daniel because of Nebuchadnezzar. Yet his response to him is one of, Daniel cares for him. He loves him. Notice the second thing. You were right there. You were on the right track. What does he do following verse 19? He's got compassion for Nebuchadnezzar. He loves him. He cares for him. He wants to see him do the right thing. So what does he go on to do in verses 20 and following? Yeah. He tells him the truth, doesn't he? I thought these verses were particularly instructive for us because compassion can often put us in a place where we don't want to speak the truth, right? Or vice versa, the truth often puts us in a place where we don't have compassion. But you see this personified in Daniel. How does his response instruct us in our witness or interaction with the world? That's what I wanted to get at. How does Daniel's response, his whole response, the truth, the compassion, the love, the instruction, the counsel, how does all of that instruct us in our interaction and witness to the world? Mm-hmm. He was dismayed. Yeah. we should have a burden for the lost. Is that what you're saying? Family members, friends who we see going down the wrong path? Yeah, certainly. To not have a sense of pride, sure. Daniel wanted to see the best for Nebuchadnezzar. Mm-hmm. Truth and love, yeah. Yeah. Takes some guts too, doesn't it? He's talking to the leader of the, not the free world, I guess, but the leader of the world. Are you going to say something?
I was just going to say, I don't know how much time is implied. It says Daniel or Belteshazzar was dismayed for a while. But you get the impression that it's in all in the same conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you think about the difference between, you talk about our witness today, there's an imminent judgment that's coming, and there is no root left in the, there's no stump left in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the righteous wrath of God that's coming.
Right.
There's not going to be any greater kingdom for men after that.
There's no preservation and restoration after the coming judgment.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
But for as we're witness to the world, I can imagine there's a big breath in between verse 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
And, yeah, hearing you say that, I think about my coworkers. I think about, you know, my family. I think about all these applications where show me, give me fresh urgency.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us a unnatural care for the lost.
Yeah, because also, like you just mentioned, right after you asked the question, knowing that you're sometimes doesn't, you know, tell them how they should act, God is supposed to be.
Right. Try to fly under the radar.
Yeah.
Well, and think about this too. Daniel here, he had a pretty big opportunity, didn't he? He knew some pretty big information about some upcoming events in the king's life that could serve him pretty well. Yeah? I know how we can get back to Israel. We've got a window of opportunity. We're coming up pretty soon. Yeah, when you see the king start eating grass, it's time to go. Yeah. Daniel could have done it, right?
I think up until this point, we both see, like, we see graces on both sides. Between Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
The relationship, how God just preserved that entire friendship.
Yeah.
That's a huge amount of grace.
There's some big stuff in those verses right there, aren't there? That's why I was a little upset that Todd didn't ask that question. It's okay. We can write him a letter and say, look, you need to insert a question there. We'll move on. What are we doing on time? All right, we're going to make it. Daniel says that Nebuchadnezzar will experience this humbling until he acknowledges that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. That's verse 25. It's also verse 17. It's also verse 32. Same phrase. Until you know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men and gives it to whom he will. Two questions. Number one, what would it mean for Nebuchadnezzar to be humble? That's important. What would it mean for Nebuchadnezzar to be humble? And two, what would be the telltale signs? So what does it mean for Nebuchadnezzar to be humble? To not be so big-headed. How is his big-headedness, which is true? I don't know his hat size, but you can tell it's pretty big from this verse. Well, that's the second question. I'm asking the second question. Okay, big-headedness. We'll ask the second question in a minute. Not to be so big-headed. Sure. To give God the glory. Definitely. What's that? Not be so prideful. That's true. The second part of the question says, what would be the telltale signs? I always put those two things backward. Telltale. What does that mean? I don't know. Almost like he's read Romans 9 or something, huh?
Yeah. But the fact that
did I say that out loud? Sorry.
But the fact that there's some, like, the most powerful man, right,
mm-hmm.
is completely down to nothing now. He grabs, right? For him to let that leave his lips.
Mm-hmm.
His
so are you saying that's the telltale sign that he's saying that?
Well, I think, Yeah.
That he's actually verbalizing that to be true?
Yeah, to finally, because if you look at the back, like, before, he kind of wasn't getting it.
Oh, yeah, he certainly wasn't getting it.
Now finally he's like, okay, now I agree. He's the bottom.
Yeah. So look at this. We're skipping ahead just a little bit, but how long was it before this happened? He was told this. How long was it before this happened? Yeah, 12 months. Do you think maybe he was? Why? Well, I'll ask the question. Why 12 months? What was going on in those 12 months, you think? You can speculate. Grace? Huh? That's possible.
I think it keys in right on those last couple verses. 27? Yeah, verse 27.
Hmm. Which are what?
To break off your sins, practice righteousness, your iniquities, showing mercy to the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things. And here, I mean, he holds on for that year. He had that information. He's already been told that. That has already been preached to him. And does it happen? No. I mean, what you see is of what those 12 months look like.
Yeah. So those, verse 27, then you're saying those would be the telltale signs that
humility had taken place.
Yeah, I think so. there is a verse or two in James. That I think are pretty instructive for what's going on here. Starting in verse 14 of James chapter 2. Here's what I think happened. I could be wrong, but here's what I think happened. I think for those 12 months that Nebuchadnezzar was showing some compassion to people and doing some good stuff. It could have just been that God stayed his judgment for 12 months, but I think Nebuchadnezzar took Daniel at his word and said, all right, I don't want to be cut down. I don't want this to happen. I don't want that to happen. I'll go feed some hungry people, and I'll go take care of the widows, and I'll do this and that. That's fine. We can do that. But I don't think it was coming from a heart of faith. And so it's hard to sustain something for a long time that's not true. I think that's what was going on. I could be wrong. It doesn't say that. But that's what I think was going on there. And I think that's partly why I say that is because of what's in James 2, verse 14. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? Now, he's not saying that works save you. He's saying that what Seth just said, you know a tree by its fruit. What's coming out of the tree is what's evidence of what's in the heart. What's coming out of a person's life is what's evidence of what's inside of them. If there are good works coming out of them, then it's evidence of what's in their heart. But there's a sustained thing there, right? Anyone can do some good stuff for a little while, right? It's when you're walking on your rooftop one day. And now think about this. I'll keep reading this verse, but think about this. Babylon was not a small place. I was reading one of the commentaries about this city. I don't remember the exact dimensions, but there's the gates of Ishtar or something like that. I don't know. You guys know your Babylonian history, maybe. 60 feet high was the gate. And that there were walls 24 feet wide, I believe, that were probably matching the gate, 60 feet high. And that they were double thick, so too wide. You could ride two chariots side by side down each of the walls. And I think it was 17 miles long on each side. And so you can imagine the king, Nebuchadnezzar, standing on his rooftop and looking out. He has the Hanging Gardens of Babylon for his wife, who's Nubian, I think. And she didn't have her homeland with her anymore. So he transported all of the flowers and plants from this place and built the Hanging Gardens of Babylon so she would have a slice of home in this kingdom. So Think about Nebuchadnezzar standing on the roof. Think about yourself standing on the roof of this place. When he says, I built this, he's not wrong. He's absolutely correct when he says that I built this, and it's beautiful, and it does show my majesty to some extent, right? So you can imagine this guy, I'm going to do these things, what he says to do. I'm going to do this because I don't want to experience this cut down and the dew on my back and the fingernails and all that stuff. You get that. But you're taking a stroll one morning. You got your coffee in your hand or your cigar in the other hand. I don't know what King Nebuchadnezzar was doing. You know, he's in his bathrobe. It says like Hilton on it. He's got his hair up in a bun. I don't know what he's doing. But he's strolling, and you can imagine just for a second going, wow. Like, this place is really cool. I do that sometimes. I walk in my study at home and I'm like, I've got like a really cool poster on the wall. Aren't I cool? Like, wow. Like, just imagine the temptation here. Imagine what's happening is his greatest fancy in the world is in front of him. And clearly what's going to be drawn out of him is what's in his heart, right? The fruit that was on the tree, one of the Tripp brothers, Paul or Ted, would say that the fruit that was on the tree was stapled fruit. He had a tree. It was an apple tree. It wouldn't produce apples. And so he had a box of apples and he had a stapler and he just started stapling apples on the tree. There's a bunch of good works. And look at my apple tree. There's apples on the tree. But they're not really growing from the tree.
I wasn't sure where this question would fit, but this is right where I go.
Go for it.
The messenger says, cut down the tree, lop off the branches, scatter the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
That is a deliberate and complete dismantling of everything that tree was.
Mm-hmm.
Stage by stage by stage.
Yeah. I think you could go there with it. I mean, clearly, I think the tree is referring to Nebuchadnezzar and not to Babylon, because Babylon wasn't laid waste and scattered. They obviously go hand in hand, at least a little bit, because the Nebuchadnezzar and the glory of Babylon kind of go together. But the scattering of it, certainly his rulership, people coming to him for counsel or to say, can I make this transaction with this person? All that stuff scattered, gone. It's not happening anymore. I think you could say his works and all that stuff would be scattered as well. But let me finish reading this in James 2. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. All he's saying is, what's in your heart is eventually going to come out, right? And I think that's what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. He had, I think for those 12 months, he was trying really hard. I think people do this all the time. Rather than dealing with the heart and dealing with what's actually going on in the heart, they just staple the fruit on the trees. They listen to what the Bible says. They listen to the commands in the Bible, and they just try to live their life according to that. But when the trials come, and in this case, the trial is simply looking at this shining kingdom in front of them, what comes out is what's inside of them. And God graciously had this man living out in the woods for 7 periods of time. I think Mike's going to deal with what 7 periods of time are next week, probably. So, I think it's 7 o'clock, though, isn't it? I don't want to keep talking. So, is there anything else before we close? I don't want to. So what does it mean that he believed Daniel? I don't think Nebuchadnezzar had any reason not to think that Daniel knew exactly what he was talking about, because he'd previously not just interpreted the dream for him, but told him what the dream was, right? So Nebuchadnezzar called Daniel to him because he said, look, I know that you're specially tuned to the gods. That's how he said it. And so I believe what you say is going to happen. And so if Daniel said, this is what's going to happen, I don't think Nebuchadnezzar Just, oh yeah, okay, that's fine. Like, holy moly, I'm in trouble. I'm going to listen to this advice. Yeah. Right. Imagine Nebuchadnezzar says this to Daniel, and he just starts seeing sweat pouring down his face. This is not good news. I wish I could tell you that this is going to happen to your enemies. But it's going to happen to you. Here's what it means. So I think he believed him fully, 100%. Which is why I think that he listened to him. Maybe both. I don't know. I don't know what Nebuchadnezzar's motivation was. Probably just, I don't want to get in trouble. Maybe I can. Okay, because that's what in Daniel's counsel to him. Daniel didn't have to give him the counsel in verse 27, did he? He didn't have to do that. He could have said, here's the interpretation. But he said, let my counsel be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by practicing righteousness. Break off your iniquities by showing mercy to the oppressed, that perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. And I think we see a 12-month lengthening of his prosperity. I think that's what happened there.